Hello, everybody. Good afternoon or good morning, depending on what part of the country you're in. Thanks for joining us. My name is Mike Gibb. I run accountsrecovery.net, and I'm really excited to be bringing you today's webinar on digital first design, follow the money, how to create a customer journey, which is part of a continuing series being sponsored by Revenly that's looking at the digital transformation within the RM industry. With so many payments coming in via payment portals today, companies in the credit collection industry need to think about the user experience and make sure their websites and portals are designed with the consumer in mind. In this webinar, again, being sponsored by Revenly, attendees will be shown tips and strategies to make sure their websites and online interactions are easy to use for consumers of all shapes and sizes. Let me tell you a little bit about today's speaker. Joshua Allen is the CEO and founder of Revenly. He's an advocate of digital change in the credit and collections industry. He has dedicated his time to solving the problems that the complexity of the collections industry faces in order to make digital transformation easier. He also loves cars, the 49ers, his daughter, and on occasion, his two dogs. The format for today's webinar will be a presentation from Josh. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when his presentation is ongoing and when it is concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the next day or so on the webinar recordings page at accountsrecovery.net. With that, let me bring in Josh Allen to begin his presentation. Josh, you ready to get started?
I am ready. Thank you very much, Excellent. Mike. Hope everybody is doing good out there, and thank you very much for joining. As Mike said, my name is Joshua Allen, and I am the CEO and founder of Revenly. Over the last few years, there has been a shift in how collection companies are now approaching payers. Digital transformation, kind of a buzzword that's been around for a while. Digital first, customer journeys, a lot of these things have been used in e-commerce and sales for decade plus. Because of the complexities around the collection industry, it's been a little bit slower to catch on. Everything from compliance to the fact that a collection agency is essentially representing multiple other companies and segments all at once. With the new CPFB guidelines coming out, and just the overall demand from customers or payers to pay in alternative methods, this is kind of a hot topic now. Everything from SMS to email to machine learning and automation. That's why we decided to do a six-part series. On Tuesday, we had Parity, and next week we have LiveOx and a few others in January. This all started in November, when I did a presentation with a gentleman from McKinsey & Company, Frederick, for our Inside Arms RMU series on digitizing your collections. So without further ado, let me just jump in here to the next slide. So first, there's digital first and customer journeys. I've mixed the two in this topic. Digital first has quite a bit of meanings. And digital first and digital transformation is where just the world is going. So this is a quote from Lionel Barber, who is the previous editor of the Financial Times. And it is that print has always been a snapshot in time. When I talk about digital first, it's in the news now. The underlying theme on his take is that being a digital company, reaching that digital segment is about being in real time, having the ability to change quickly, being agile, quicker time to market, deployment, and responsive. That's for the collection industry has been a challenge with siloed information and, again, regulation, sending letters, phone calls, and the lack of innovation or the slow approach of innovation in this industry. So that little cartoon in the bottom left is a great explanation of a company trying to become a digital first company, right? Nobody really knows, even the people that they hire. How do you start and how do you do this? We will address that. The other side is the customer journey. Funny enough, I went and looked up customer journey meme on Google earlier this morning, and that picture is actually from a FICO blog. So they even wrote about this. And essentially the customer journey, which I designed a very crude chart during the slide, in collection space, it has been sending a letter and making a phone call. There is not much of a customer journey involved, but as communication channels develop, that journey is developing. And as we'll also see a little bit later, actually two slides away, is that the McKinsey and Company study that they had done on this shows a segment of 25% of delinquent account holders in their survey were digital first. And their definition of digital first is these are the consumers or the payers who are again delinquent, who are not going to go through the traditional channels. And this segment wasn't there 10 years ago. And of course, it's growing over time. And the only way to really reach these people is through email and text and other alternative channels or newer channels. So what I always encourage is thinking like a retailer, regardless of the vertical that we are in. And basically everyone who's paying is a customer, regardless if that's how they're looked at. They're in debt or they're not in debt, they're still a customer. And making that experience better and easier for them is a priority of ours and what I encourage everybody to do when they approach any type of digital change. One of the big exercises that I do, and everyone listening right now can actually do this, is you could pull out your phone, go to your company's website, and start walking through the process of paying a bill. Okay, that's the start of the experience right there, assuming that you've already got the letter or you've got a voicemail or you've got a call asking you to pay this bill. And you could, of course, take it back and get your letter in front of you, see the URL, even send one to yourself. I encourage you to just send a collection letter to yourself and start walking through that journey. If you start counting the steps it really should take three steps to get to the end. Sometimes it takes 10 to 15. And that's if somebody's clicking all the right buttons and can even find it. So I guess with that, before I go ahead, I'll let you jump in, Mike, with the survey questions. And these five survey questions are the same ones that we did on our past webinar. And at the end, I'll share the results of those compared to these, see if we have a similar audience.
Yep, here's the first two questions here. People should see it pop up on their screen. One other thing I wanted to note, Josh, with respect to the great idea you had about people going to their own website and seeing how long it takes to pay a bill. I recall listening to somebody give a presentation a couple of years ago, and one idea they had was the same thing. Go to your company's website, see how easy it is to pay a bill. And one of the rule of thumb was if you need to use more than one hand to do it, if you can't do it with one hand on your phone, if you need both hands, then that's probably too involved. So it's also something else that I think customer or people should be thinking of as they think of the user experience, is not just how many steps, but how complicated the process actually is.
I like the one hand method. I have not heard that, but that's good.
Sorry, we're just going to give the first two questions another few seconds. And then we'll launch the second poll, which will be three other short questions. All right, so the first one, we're going to close, and we will launch the second one. The second one should be popping up on your screen now. While we wait for people to give their answers, Josh, I did have a question. I loved your idea of think like a retailer. I think it's a great way for people to sort of the frame of mind that people to have. Do you have an example of kind of how that applies to a collection agency or a collection operation? Like what type of question they should be asking that'll help them sort of think like a retailer?
I think that thinking of checking out. I had a slide in here and I removed it. Now I regret it after you asking that question. but it was a slide that ranked the easiest mobile checkout processes. And you would think that Amazon would actually be at the top, and they weren't. It was Target. And so Target essentially, they simplified the one-time checkout, whereas Amazon actually ranked higher because they collect information along the way. That's a little bit more complicated. And as companies get down the path, I mean, that's what I would actually encourage, is more the Amazon way. But thinking like a retailer, I would say Target really did nail it. I actually had to go test it myself and see how easy it was to check out. And the one thing I noticed, the difference between Amazon and Target when I did this actually, was when they ask for you to log in. And Target asks you to log in after you hit checkout. And Amazon asks you to log in right before you get to the checkout screen, after you've added things to your cart. That must have something to do with it somewhere. But when you're thinking like a retailer, it's actually looking at those steps and where you're gathering information and how you are essentially treating the person who's paying. Because at the end of the day, that person was a customer somewhere. Right, they owed a bill because they were a customer or something, and they just need to pay for it now. That's actually probably the easiest part, is they've already actually purchased the service or the product, and they're trying to pay. It's just you have to make it very easy on them. But the same time, the complexities of the collection agent industry, I guess it makes it a little bit more dynamic than that. So that's a very black and white answer, but it doesn't. I don't think it covers the complexities of the industry itself.
Okay. Well, I'll close the second poll now, and when you're ready to show the results, you let me know, and I'll share them. But for now, the presentation's back to you.
Okay. Absolutely. Thank you. When it comes to digital first and digital thinking, digital transformation and all that fun stuff, I'll just leave these two guys up on the screen because the quotes are, pretty good. But when it comes to that, digital transformation is more of a methodology. Everyone thinks channels, mediums, devices, multi-channel, omni-channel, SMS, email. Really, it is a methodology. It's a new way of thinking and working. It's daunting to a lot of organizations because when you start implementing these things, there's pushback internally. There's cultural change where you need to evaluate the strategy and organize teams around it, processes and everything. One of the things that I learned a few years ago was how many different departments that it touched on. And there was a quote that I read last night that said, digital transformation means significant and sweeping organizational change. It is not something that will be led by IT or chief digital officer alone. And that rang true because after we got started, we touched on operations, the IT department, and accounting all across the board. So we have to work with them all in sync in order to accomplish anything. But let's get to the bottom line benefits, which why is there even an investment into this in the first place? Why does this matter? So this came from the McKinsey and Company presentation and one of the studies that they did internally. 1,000 respondents, they did it with the major national banks. And the big reason I chose this slide was that top right corner, 24% of the total respondents are that digital first customer. This is in a younger age group, 25 to 44, but these are the ones who are looking for text, email, web, mobile, not the traditional methods, as you see in the bottom left, in order to engage and respond. So how does this hit the bottom line? Again, this is one of their other slides, or actually from a different study, I think, but similar nonetheless. The 73% down there, that 73% of customers in late delinquency took action. So they made a payment when contacted through a digital channel. So that's incredibly high. Makes perfect sense. If you get a text message, you open it. Before everybody goes and signs up for texting, we'd want to take it a step back, and actually that 73% wouldn't be as high without channel orchestration anyway. So this is kind of in a perfect storm environment where you have a lot of channel orchestration, where you're using things in, again, real time, and you have things, data and responses, again, passing in real time. The chart on your left, it just shows the payment action by last contact for accounts that are over 30 days. And of course, the digital side has quite a bit more interaction than the other ones. So this doesn't actually mean get rid of your letters and phone calls and collections. We have to do that anyway. It just means incorporating newer channels along with traditional channels, again, in a kind of a orchestrated way. This was pulled from, and I know Citi actually announced something yesterday about them focusing on this even more, but this was pulled from October. And Citibank had 5% year-over-year deposits, which is a big focus of theirs, at least according to, again, yesterday's release. And they credited that mostly to their digital change. So, and said in that last line there, two-thirds, so year-to-date, the digital first approach has brought in some $4 billion of consumer deposits, two-thirds of which have come from outside of its traditional branch footprint. So I guess, again, you follow the money. Banks are very good examples of that because, you know, that is kind of their bread and butter. So a lot of them are, kind of seemingly where, you know, U.S. Bank has a chief digital officer. And another chief digital officer who actually, again, I kind of saw a study on a Reddit quote from was Rob Roy, who is the CDO of Sprint. And he had actually mentioned something about when they did this digital transformation. And his quote just said, after 6 months, we learned that just because you say it doesn't make it so. It's not about digitizing a channel or simply doing more things digitally. It's a much broader scope than that. So that again rings true, because a lot of what we get asked is, do you have texting? Can we do, you know, implement texting? Of course, but how are you going to use it? Well, what do you expect to come out of that? So kind of an easy place to start is the customer journey. This one right here, I just pulled off online, and most customer journeys are not, they don't exist in collections, because the customer journey really is, how do we get a sale? How do we get someone to buy a t-shirt? How do we get someone to sign up for, I don't know, subscription magazines? And as digital and traditional interact, there's a million customer journey maps out there. There's templates, you can grab them online. You can write them down in bullet points. But this is a pretty decent looking one that starts from, you know, awareness, consideration, purchase, service, loyalty, you know, them coming back, and all of the different touch points. Now, this doesn't really segment it out. Like if somebody stalls it at consideration, how many times on the physical and digital that they need. But customer journey is important no matter what line of business, again, especially if you're going to think like the retailer. So here's the digital, I'm sorry, here's the original journey of debt collection. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. You send a letter, and you make a phone call, and that person over there has their hands full. And I'm sure I know it's come, actually, I know it's come farther than this, but, you know, 30 years ago, you know, up until still recent, this is primarily, it's dial for dollars, right? It's not the best way, as you saw in the other charts earlier, it's not the best way to reach someone. It's not the customer friendly way. It's not very warm. People just aren't answering their phones. And I think contrary to popular belief, people may not be responding to letters, but they do open them. So I wrote an article about that maybe a little less than a year ago about physical mail. But the open rates of physical mail, especially with millennials, is actually fairly high. But the response rate is not. So mail does work. It's a great starting point and it's required for debt collection anyway. So this is the McDonald's model of a customer journey and the easiest way to start. So those top two is 1960s in the restaurant industry. And this is something that anyone can do. You can do it on a napkin. It's not a pretty chart. It's not, again, it's not very dynamic. It's just it's pretty. I wouldn't say if you were to make one of these, don't go take it to the executive room and pitch it. But this is a good starting point. The top two is the restaurant industry in the 60s. With top left one is regular restaurant. How you get there is 9 steps to get home with your food. The one on the right hand side is McDonald's in the 1960s, and in red are the ones that they removed. Should have used strike through, but just pretend those ones are stricken through. They removed 2 steps from that. 1975 down there, you know, they removed arriving at the restaurant. So what happened there? And they removed getting back in the car. What happened there was the drive through. So they just, you know, removed those steps. As you can see, wait for your bill came back. Steps are interchangeable. 2018, Uber Eats, and I think a few of the other ones picked up McDonald's. They now deliver it, which is still a little bit weird. But now you don't even have to get in your car. You don't have to even actually pay, you know, because you pay as you order. And you don't have to, you know, arrive home anymore. 3-step process now to get your McDonald's. So that's a customer journey in a very, very, very simplistic form. All right, so this is a slightly more complicated customer journey. And now to conflate and confuse everyone, I jumped from digital transformation straight into customer journey. Digital transformation takes a long time because it's a big organizational change. Customer journey is a good way to documenting it is something that everyone can do now. And with everything in front of them, you can find leaks. You can essentially find leaks that people aren't reporting, you know, people trying to pay who aren't reporting back to you just by reading the tea leaves or looking at the numbers, which will help sell the idea to the organization for broader digital change. So this customer journey right here is only one segment of a bigger customer journey. This is actually only a payment portal. This is it. So if you were to zoom out a lot more, this is just one dot, and then you have all the other dots. So this is a very zoomed in model of the payment portal. And as you can see, you know, you have your guest, your dashboard, registration. So these are dashboards, people who've already registered, logged in. And the red are drop-off points. So by looking at something like this, which again is incredibly easy to spin up, with no real cost investment, you could see where things are complicated and how many interactions it takes for someone to get to somewhere. So to dive in and continue to segment these things on a customer's journey, what does it all mean? At least one data point. So out of this, we are actually able to see maybe that 38% of registered users opted into SMS, which is 20% overall. The overall is the ones who pay by guest and things like that, because they're not really opting in to SMS at this time, but they're still factored in to the payers. So 38% of the registered users opt into SMS, and there you go. There is your SMS interest, and you've just accomplished one of the greatest feats in compliantly getting the opt-in, because all these users are self-doing it, and you just found that on your customer journey. And could we increase this to 50%? Absolutely. How? Change a few of the steps, look at them deeper, look at, you know, and how those actually happen. It's, you know, fairly easy. And as we saw, again, go back a few charts, what happens when you have the, actually we will go back a few charts. What happens when you now have SMS opt-in? You can look over, there we go. Look over there on the digital text messaging for the partial payments. I mean, it's has that number 58, and of course, then you can look at that 73%. So you have all those people telling you right there in your customer journey, hey, yeah, text me, and you're seeing the results. So we will go here. Here's another little bit about segmentation again. Here's full balance. And again, these are these last two are actually ones that I'm showing most companies should have this data already in front of them. There was a question, still my favorite question, 2 days ago on our last webinar, where somebody asked Greg of Parity, where do you get this behavioral data? And you know, who do you buy it from? Where do you get it? How does it work? And his answer was, it's in your call transcripts. You're getting behavioral data all the time. You're, you know, maybe you're just not breaking it out. Look at the call transcripts. Agents are getting behavioral data over the phone. Someone mentions something to them. And they just need to listen for the cues, or the cues need to be recorded, documented, and you can still building profiles around what your customer base looks like. And again, segment it out. So what this is how many people go to a portal and pay in full? So entirely 64%, clicking full balance. There you go. We can, again, break this out fairly easily. The top one there is that same group broken down, desktop, and then the bottom is mobile and tablet. So if your online portal isn't mobile friendly, or it wasn't built mobile first, there's a difference between mobile first and mobile friendly, then you're missing out on a massive segment. As you can see there in the little pie chart, slightly over 40% of the overall traffic is mobile or tablet. And if it's not very mobile friendly, if you're on your phone right now trying to walk through that process yourself, and you can't get through it on your phone very easily with one hand, you know, you're missing out on a massive segment of people who want to pay their balance in full. So this number is going to drop considerably. And you know, you'll still have this one here, possibly, but you know, that again, you could, and then you could break this down into what type of phones, what type of browsers, and on and on and on. And again, a lot of these things are just right in front of every agency. So let me, before I, Mike, do you have any input while I skim my notes real quick before I jump right into the next one?
Yeah. Well, first, let me remind everybody, if you have a question for Josh, open up hit the Q&A button on your Zoom webinar control panel, which will open up a window for you to type your question out and send it to him. We'll definitely do our best to get to it before we wrap up today. You know, I get my question, or a question, one of the questions I have for you is, this is, you know, the information is awesome. I think, you know, if I take a step back, if I'm at a collection agency and I start to sort of look at the process, look at it from a retail perspective, you know, let's say I, you know, like going back to the, you know, the slide where you had the different steps for getting food, if I identify sort of three or four things where I think I can maybe streamline the process that maybe I don't need or I can sort of change, how do you then sort of prioritize which one to do first? You know, is it a cost thing? Is it a how much time am I going to save? Like, what are some of the criteria that people should look at when they actually have to go and make some of these changes?
So I think every organization is in a certain is a slightly different stage. My first approach is starting where you want them to end, and where you want them to end is essentially you want to be able to return that customer to your client, right? Happy with the bill, everything paid off. And so the way that I would start is looking at where you have them end now. And journey aside, one of the biggest things that I see, and it's not wrong, but it doesn't make it any easier, is directing people to a corporate site and expecting them to find a small pay here button, which will then jump them somewhere else. And I think splitting up those, you have your corporate site and your consumer site, are two places that are, if it's not already done, are kind of basic requirements. It doesn't mean go out and pay $10,000 to have a new website built. It's a lot easier than that. You know, you could whip one up in a day. You know, but essentially do that. So we got a question here. Can you talk about consumer friction and the impact it has on consumer engagement? So if I'm reading this right, and questioner, you feel free to follow up if I'm not reading it right. But essentially consumer friction as in drop-off rates and things like that. Like if somebody can't get through on the phone, that's friction. If you get a letter in the mail, then which I'm trying to, I guess I'm brainstorming for a good example of
I think maybe where people come to your website and drop off.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to create an account, or this website's taking, you know, this page is taking too long to load, or
that's
they're
a
asking
good one
for information I don't have.
The website loading one is a great example. Load time is a big drop off point for friction. We move at the speed of light today, and people don't like to. People don't have the time to wait for 5 seconds for your website to load. It is, you know, it's they drop off. If your website redirects to another website, which then redirects to another website in order to get them to pay, every one of those steps is friction. With one client, they had a pay now button on their website, which then it said pay here. That then directed them to another internal page that just had more information, which then someone had to click and say pay here, which then put them on a third party site to pay. So that's one, two steps, right? After they got their letter. These people are not going to that to jump through those hoops. Every one of those is friction points. And when we removed those, their traffic at the end goal jumped 10%, right? So they had 10% more people now getting to the end. So that friction between those small points were drop off. Now that, how does that relate to engagement? Well, that person who dropped off, that 10% group, is likely not going to come back. They are not going to, you know, you lost them. I just consider them lost. I mean, there is always a group that does come back when they have time, but they're lost. And to take that a step further, again, with orchestration among channels and why it's very important, and a learning lesson that we kind of had was that people trying to pay their bills, if they have problems, they won't always tell the people in the call center they have problems. So you may have a friction point online, having someone trying to pay, or anywhere in your process. But when they call in and they make a payment, they're just going to make that payment. They're not going to actually report it back. And if they do report it back, and you don't have an organizational understanding with the floor, with your call center floor, that your floor should be reporting that up the chain that, hey, somebody had a problem on our website or somebody had a problem with this. Those do not usually get passed right to the right department. So those things have to kind of be implemented. And all those are all friction points that should be addressed, because engagements, engagement absolutely increases the amount that you'll get paid. So one of the big things we see, like a number that's absolutely across our board, is that those who sign up with SMS have a 7.5 times likeliness to sign up for auto pay. Okay, that's big, right? And what else does that mean? So let's now say someone signs up for auto pay and they're not on SMS, and somebody is on SMS, and they are. If that auto payment fails and they get a fail, a payment failure response in real time versus an email, that person who gets the email is going to possibly go in and correct it within a day, couple, 8, 12 hours, 24 hours. The time is, there's a lot of time, and that's on email. SMS, they're getting it right away. And I don't have the exact numbers, but we see a lot of those being corrected within an hour. Someone goes in, makes a payment with a different payment method, changes their payment method on their auto pay plan. But again, that's engagement. And that's, again, orchestrating channels across, all the multi-channel stuff gives a good experience. So I hope that answered your, or I hope that helped explain it to Tim, what you were looking for. There's another one. Seems that good consumer experience and proper disclosure consent are very difficult in mobile environments. How do you balance the two forces? Good design, design like a designer. So the question is basically, in a mobile environment, how do you get all the consent, disclosures, the legal language, how do you get that all in front of somebody, opt them into everything, and still give them the same pleasant experience that you're shooting for? It comes down to having a good designer. And throw it out there, everything should be designed nowadays in mobile first. So that's where you design it for a phone first, and then it can expand to a desktop. That's like the newest design methods in terms of website design and mobile app design. Whereas before, mobile friendly is where you're designing a website and it's adapting to the phone. There's a difference between having a designer who designs in print media and one who designs in online. A lot of designers do both, but a lot of them specialize in one or the other. And when you have a good designer, you can fit all those things into a good experience. It is that simple. The harder part is communicating to someone who's designing it, that you need all that stuff in there, and then working with them. And that can be a very long, expensive, tedious process. And there is the build versus buy model, where companies have already invested a lot of money into building it and then selling it, as a service, as a SaaS platform or a license. And then there's building it yourself, which, again, it's expensive, long process, but at least you can control what's going on in that. That's a good. It's actually a good question. And hope I didn't oversimplify the design answer, but that's, I think, where it really rests. So this might actually touch on that frictionless one now. This is kind of a famous study. The green red button study. And if you were to guess, green means go and red means stop. So which one gets more clicks? Again, this is all the way down to segmentation, consumer experience, and thinking like a retailer. Surprisingly, green does not get more clicks. The red button gets 21% more. that's big, right? So now when you say you have a payment portal and, you know, it's fine because you're getting payments, start thinking about things like this. Is it optimized to get the most payments? Another fun thing is like registration versus guest payments. What's the difference in the average payment? You know, if somebody sees all their account information versus sees nothing, there's a difference. This was the power of suggestion, but this is just, you know, famous thing on buttons. This doesn't mean go change all your buttons to red. I wouldn't suggest that either, but it's a good study. So if anybody got this email, this is an email that we actually sent out yesterday. So this is just another thing that can be done. It's kind of obvious which one would have gotten more clicks, but the register free here button versus the link got quite a bit more clicks. The button is a button. It stands out. It's obvious. And it says here, you know, points it out. Whereas the other one is kind of a link and it just leaves it up to your, you know, click it. There's nothing pointing it out. It's just for you to evaluate yourself. Changed the wrong screen there. How do you change? Well, I think a lot of this is, again, it's organizational change. The first thing to change is working with your people. It's not, and I know that this one starts at building digital channels and technology and infrastructure, but to really start, it's working with your people, working with across all departments to basically, you know, help people understand and why and adopt a digital first thinking. You really need to convince everybody to be on board or there's going to be a lot of friction internally, which leads to a lot of friction externally. And so that's why, again, I harp on SMS. Just adopting SMS and deploying SMS, if you don't have all the other departments and synchronized channels in line, it's not going to actually have the impact that you want. Everyone has to be there. So after this, again, this is from McKinsey as well. But they really, it's looking at your technology and infrastructure, looking at all your channels, listing them out, who comes through what, and how does it work right now. Then segmentation, incorporating things like machine learning and AI is great. They help with segmentation and learning. Basically who these people are and how to better approach them, both on the call center floor and digitally. And then a strategy implementation, make sure all channels are talking in real time. I understand that's very hard in a siloed environment, which most of this industry is, but APIs are something to look at and continue to push all vendors to adopt in order to kind of keep up with, you know, with the times, so to speak. And then of course that very last one down there is tailoring your messaging. Different people may want to hear different things. Again, just talk about parity. Parity has something where their machine learning and AI will actually help match the debtor with the right agent to talk to. Maybe they have something in common. So that's very tailored messaging. But again, yeah, tailored messaging and then going, it's not a short process. Big companies don't do this overnight, so you can't expect a smaller one to either. And I guess before we could just leave this up and people can read it, but I know you want to go over the survey results, Mike? This is my last slide, sure. But I'd love to hear that.
I should share the results from the first survey. How do you pay your personal bills? Desktop, mobile phone, and mobile tablet are the most popular. And then how do you pay your personal bills are only given these options. Desktop, again, still far and away the most popular choice.
Okay.
And then looking at company questions. Does your company have a job title along the lines of Director of Innovation, Chief Digital Officer, or some related job specifically tasked with transformation and finding newer technology? 50-50, right down the line. And then what are your top two channel investment priorities during the next 12 months? Payment IVR, email. Far and away the best two, followed by payment portal and chat. And then what level of channel orchestration does your organization currently have? Moderate versus okay. Some and none.
So that last so one.
Definitely, yep.
Yeah, I was gonna say that last one is the other webinar. It was a bigger sample group, but we had overwhelmingly none. So that's good. That's good to see that, you know, even that one took over there. Yeah. So I guess the key takeaways are right there. Essentially, digital transformation is an organizational change. The easy way to start is by documenting your current customer journey now and being able to talk, I guess, across the entire organization about it. It's a methodology. It's not just going out and getting SMS and starting to email people. And again, the other best way is just help your people change and adopt digital first thinking. That's essentially my presentation. Mike, do you have any other questions yourself?
As long as an officer, as well as a final reminder to everybody, if you have a question for Josh, this is probably your last chance now to type it in, and we'll try and take care of it before we wrap up. But my question to you is, we've talked about all of these, you know, this new approach and the priorities and how to sort of look at it, you know, how to look at the experience differently. But we're talking about sort of doing it once now today. How do you sort of build a process where you're sort of constantly sort of thinking, like, you know, asking yourself these questions in your head, or getting your employees to ask these questions in their head about user experience and about, you know, sort of process and things like that? How do you sort of build that culture within an organization? Because to me, that seems almost just as important as sort of stopping today and taking a look, but then you've got to be able to sort of continually do that down the road.
So I was in Washington, D.C. last month, and I actually asked an executive at one of the very large agencies that question. I said, how did you guys do it? You're one of the few and far between who have actually like really put this whole, like, we're going to be like tech, you know, first forward. And they told me that a couple years ago, they got all their executives. They had an executive retreat and they agreed across all the departments that they were going to make an organizational change. And they said that was the first big step in doing it. And since then, pieces started to fall into place because it was understood across all departments that it was an objective for them. So then, of course, that trickles down. And you have things like business, like BI tools, you know, analytics, things like that, incentivizing agents and everyone really to start looking out for new stuff, for new things. I guess it's more than just collecting the payment now. It's also, it's a listening to all the other things, and it's just more open communication across the board. That's a good question. I think it could go on forever. On how to do it. That's a consulting company right there.
That's an engagement.
Yes. Yeah. Really. That's a big one. But I think top down is first, right? You can't just say, hey, director of IT, do this.
Right.
and not talk to accounting and not talk to it, because it really does impact everybody. So it is having all those key players at least understanding, hey, these are things that we're looking at doing. Because once you mention these things, I think a lot of people start to speak up. and that otherwise wouldn't. Everyone does see it.
Okay. Well, I don't. There aren't any other questions in the queue. I know you've got takeaways here on the screen, and there's a bunch of them there. Any other sort of parting words of wisdom you'd like to share with the audience before we wrap up for today and get ready for our webinar next week, looking at SMS?
Yeah, that was it. I was just going to say next week we're doing one. Well, actually, LiveVox is doing one on SMS. Will end the year out. And then in January, Michael Lamb on the value of technology and Gordon Beck on virtual agents. And that's it. Just check out next week's and you can get all these recordings with Mr. Gibbs here.
Awesome. Well, excellent. Well, Josh, thank you for a great presentation on a very important topic. Really appreciate your insights. Also appreciate on behalf of Reverently, you and Reverently appreciate your sponsorship of today's webinar. I hope everybody enjoyed the presentation today. Please check out Reverently's website at www.reverently.io to learn more about the company. If anyone wants a recording of this event, will be posted in the next day or so to the webinar recordings page on accountsrecovery.net. And I hope everybody enjoys the rest of their day. Josh, great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, take care.